When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Did you ever take a philosophy class in college?
I'm sure I did. Don't remember, though.
Okay, well, that's fine. I took philosophy of logic and nearly failed. I never took an actual philosophy class, though, and it was never like that intriguing to me, but
You set me up for a joke.
What is it?
Philosophy of logic and almost failed?
Yeah.
Dang,
yeah.
Women, huh? Mm-hmm. Women.
Logic.
I'm sorry. I interrupted your thought. I'm sorry.
I, though, found that while I was reading a couple different articles about draft philosophies, it was really interesting to me. So I figured that I would ask you and myself and listeners how you would approach the draft if you were a GM. And I don't mean like, I would go in and try to find Troy Fautanu. I mean, like, are you a best player available all the time and then you switch to need? Are you someone who looks for very specific pieces? Are you someone who, you know, like, what is the philosophy that works for you as a GM? So I figured we could talk about it. I've got some submissions from listeners on the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. And then also there was a really interesting article I read about Bill Belichick's draft philosophy, and then an article on Bill Walsh's draft philosophies. It's from 2012, but it's still really relevant for this upcoming Thursday. So let's start with just general draft philosophies. It feels, Bump, like the most prominent we always hear is best player available.
Yeah, I think here's the thing. If your franchise does not need a quarterback, you go for best available. If you need a quarterback, you have to reach. Even if it's a year where you feel like these aren't the guys. If you don't have a quarterback who you feel can win you 9, 10, 11 games, sneak you into the playoffs, you reach at that quarterback spot. That's why I'm looking at the Patriots and saying, you really going to trade out of that third spot? You don't really have your guy. That's why we know the Bears are going with Caleb. That's not a reach, number one pick. That's why we're looking at Minnesota and saying, are you going to trade up? Are you going to try to get into this mix? We're looking at the Raiders, the Broncos, and saying, you don't really have your guy. You guys are quarterback needy and desperate. Yep. Are you going to move up? If you're in that situation, then you draft for need. After that, I think you draft for best available out there. After that, when you're talking, another one, actually, another position, offensive lineman. If you need an offensive lineman, you are in desperate need to protect now your prized possession in your quarterback. So you do have your franchise quarterback, but he's been sacked a whole bunch of times. He's not being protected. Then you have to go ahead and get the best offensive lineman out there. You got to protect the asset that's going to cost you the most. Offensive line and quarterback, you got to go and just draft for need. After that, it's best football player. I believe the article that you mentioned was Bill Belichick when he talked about Lawrence Taylor being drafted. And then who did they draft behind
him? Banks.
Carl Banks. And they're saying, look, we already got the best linebacker in the game, but he's the best available player. Let's go and get him. So I think once you get out of those two positions, then you kind of start saying it don't matter. We just need ball players on the field.
Well, and I love Belichick's story there, too, because it's not just about getting the best player available because you just happen to get a baller. It's also what it does for the players you already have. And that's why I love Bill Belichick's story. So he's talking about back in 1984 when he was with New York. And as you mentioned, they already had Lawrence Taylor. And, you know, you're thinking when you're with that front office, well, why do we need another linebacker? But then after you take Carl Banks and he makes Lawrence Taylor better, you wonder, it's not like Lawrence Taylor wouldn't have been a Hall of Famer. It's not like Carl Banks made his career per se. But you have to think about when you draft the best available player, and let's say all of a sudden you have the best cornerback tandem in the league or whatever. Well, how much better does a great corner make Devin Witherspoon? You know what I mean? Like, how does it affect the legacy of a player you already have? And that's the point that Bill Belichick was making about, like, Lawrence Taylor was always going to be great. But Lawrence Taylor was even better because we took this guy that we didn't necessarily need, but we thought would make that linebacker room better because we just thought he was the best player.
Yeah.
So it ends up affecting the legacy of another player. I thought it was a really cool point. Another point that I really liked it came from Bill Walsh talking about his own draft philosophies. And it's the idea of this being a bad class. So he hated the statement, this is a bad draft for blank. Maybe it's just a bad draft in general, which people have said, you know, looking back on the 2013 NFL draft class. Maybe it's a bad draft for defensive players, which people have said about this class. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of the top 10 players taken in this class will be offensive players. But Bill Walsh always said, you only need enough depth for us, our team, to acquire 12 good players. I don't care if, for instance, it's frequently been said like, oh, this isn't a good draft this year, 2024. It's not a good draft for linebackers. Well, I don't care if 32 teams can't find 32 good linebackers. I care if I can find a good linebacker.
Yeah.
So why would I look at this class and go, not a lot of depth for linebackers, it's not great. Or like the best linebacker could go in round two, it's not great. Well, what if that guy's a great player and makes my team better?
Exactly. It's fit.
Right.
It's fit. Does this linebacker, since we're using him as an example, does he fit what I want him to do? Maybe I don't need a starter. Maybe I need a guy who's going to help on special teams and give our starter a breather every now and then. And our starter might be in year 10, 11, mm-hmm. and he's on the back nine of his career, and we need to develop somebody. Analysts look at the draft as a whole, and they group everyone together and say, as a group, they're not good. Like you mentioned, you don't need a group to be good. You need individuals to be good. And if you can find your individual in a group that is said to be not the best class of the year or the best group of the year, then so be it. It don't matter what the group is. It matters what individuals are and if you think they can fit into your system. You got to find guys for you. Eastern Washington, I'm sure other universities have this saying too. They got T-shirts. I think it's EKG, Eastern kind of guy, right? There's a certain player that the Eagles go after. They know they're not going to get the 5-star. They know they might not even get the 4-star. They're looking at 3-stars, looking at blue-collar kids, guys who want to come in and work hard. That's an Eastern kind of guy. UW should be looking at 5-stars, should be going after 4-stars. It's different. Wazoo, we take whatever the heck we can get. 3, 4, 5, 6, it don't matter. If you want to come to Wazoo and you can fit what Dickard wants to do, and you can fit what our offensive coordinator wants you to do, then you're that type of guy. In the NFL, man, everyone who is selected can play some ball. Can they do it in your system? So that's what they're leaning on, and that's what I believe as well. As long as you don't need a quarterback, as long as you don't need to protect your quarterback, go and get the best guy.
I love this one because it's our first philosophical debate where not only you and I, but you may not agree with this listener. One listener said, if you are drafting outside of, let's say, top 10, 15, you should draft for best potential. So I'm going to actually expand this past just the first round and look at two very particular quarterbacks. Of the day three quarterbacks, Spencer Rattler is probably the one best suited to most soon be a backup or have the clearest path to like maybe being a starter. Like there's the most like NFL ready notes with him. The greatest potential is with Tennessee's Joe Milton.
Yeah, we
6'5", 236.
Mm-hmm.
He has the highest ceiling of any of those day three guys.
Yeah.
He hasn't touched it. So who would you take?
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Do you go potential or do you go NFL ready? His potential,
I'm going potential.
His measurables are greater than Spencer
Rattler.
I'm
going potential. Once you get out of the top quarterbacks, now I'm thinking you're going to be a project anyway, right? You're going to sit and try to figure this thing out. We don't expect you to start right now. So now I'm going with the physical. This is where I go against everything I believe in because I'm 5'11", 195. And back in my day, you looked at a guy like me and was like, all right, man, if you don't run a 4-3, then we're not messing with you. Now I'm flipping. I'm going with a 6'5", 235-pound quarterback because physically he's going to be able
best
to do
arm.
Things on
yep.
the field that Spencer Rattler can't do physically, right?
Yep.
Mentally, we'll see where they're at. Spencer Rattler has been bred to be a quarterback since he was a little boy.
Yep.
I don't know the history of Joe Milton like I do with Spencer Rattler, but this is all he's been destined to do. A guy like Joe Milton, at that size, I'm going to go out on a limb and say he played another position at one point. He probably played some wide receiver. He definitely played some quarterback. He maybe played some tight end because...
Shoot, he could have been a center fielder. Like, this
exactly.
guy is a freak athlete.
Yeah, so once you get later in the draft, now I'm looking at size, speed, measurables. Okay, he obviously has to be able to play the position.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to make a decision between him and Spencer, I got to go with the shiny 6'5", 235 rocket arm mobile quarterback type of dude.
Tell me what you think. So, and I agree with you. I'm always more intrigued, and it's because I'm playing with house money. I'm not a real GM. I'm always more intrigued by potential because there is a great chance that that potential is never reached. Mm-hmm. Every NFL player drafted has potential.
Yep.
Some of them have higher ceilings than others, and if you're not picking at 15 and instead looking at pick 176 or whatever it is, 190, whatever, all of a sudden you're thinking, well, this is a little bit more of a roll of the dice. Like this is, mm-hmm. you know. So I like that philosophical debate. Do you go potential or do you go who's ready? Even if this, for the person with potential has a higher ceiling.
What, would you describe that the Rick Woolen was potential, right?
Yep.
Only 14 games
at the
position?
You could have found a more NFL ready at the time on
paper.
And why'd
they go with Rick?
Because of his potential.
Man, and
because
those he 4.26, whatever.
His, like, the little web that they do when they do, like, speed, strength, uh-huh. you know, like, you know, three cone, like, all these different things was just a circle. Like, it was just, like, every single thing was, like, you know, like, 99th percentile. Tell me what you think about this one. I liked this from Bill Walsh as well. Because it's especially relevant for one player in particular that will go in the top three. Jaden Daniels. He said, never take the one-year wonder and look forward. Take the one-year wonder and look back. We were just talking about potential, so this sounds, you know, like hypocritical, but we were talking about potential because a listener brought it up. Bill Walsh's stance is actually opposite of what we were saying. He said, look, I got burned in 1987 taking a running back that had one amazing year, and then he ended up just being a one-year wonder, and that was it.
You say his name?
Terrence Flagler.
Okay.
So he said when he's looking at, like, you know, can you try to project what someone would do, take a look back and try to figure out, like, well, what happened here? Like, what, you know, what might explain why there wasn't as much production instead of looking at just 1 year going, oh, he can do that in the NFL.
Yeah, I like that because I've seen and been around guys who have figured it out for a year. And then teams start to prepare for you. And then they start to give you different type of looks. And then now you're in your own head. Their expectations. You just won a Heisman Trophy. I'm not saying Jaden Daniels is going to get to the NFL and not work out. But what I am saying, and we've talked about this before, is that he had one good year with two receivers that will be drafted in the first round. Michael Penix, two good years with a receiver that's going to be drafted in the first round. Went further than than LSU. And had a tougher schedule.
Yeah.
So you look at Jaden Daniels, you go, okay, we're banking on him duplicating what he did for 1 year. When he was at Arizona State, you saw some potential. You saw the mobility. You saw the arm. But you saw also he didn't make guys around him better. And that's what you're looking at when it comes to receivers, quarterbacks. Well, Michael Penix, you look at Michael Penix, Roma Dunze wasn't Roma Dunze until Michael Penix got there. He did have some guys in front of him. Puka was there for a little bit. He had to develop. But Michael Penix took that program to another level.
Elevated it.
LSU has been LSU for the last 10, 15 years. You expect them to win 9 or 10 games. You expect them to go to a major bowl game. That's just what they do because of the talent that they're going to acquire. UW wasn't that. Michael Penix took that thing to the next level. So there's another difference right there. I mean, my Cougar homie is going to be on my head because I talk about Penix every single day.
Well, I mean, he might go in the first round.
I really believe in this dude. But you can't ignore what Jaden did. I mean, 40 touchdowns, Heisman Trophy.
You have to respect pay attention it. To it. Yeah. Exactly. But you also have to look back and go, okay, is this because Jaden Daniels went through multiple offensive coordinators and had to transfer mm-hmm. and maybe had some injuries? Or is this because a coach couldn't get as much out of him? Because to Bill Walsh's point, he said, if a good coach was unable to get a player to produce before his final season, how could I do that at the NFL? Like, mm-hmm. why? Like, so he said, this was a former Georgetown coach, John Thompson, in this article mentions that when the parents of a prospective recruit would ask him to make sure their son attended classes, he said, if you can't get him to go, why could I? So it's this idea of why didn't I see this and why would I think that if the reason is bad, that I could change that.
Ego.
Yeah.
Connection.
Yeah.
I've listened to a lot of coaches speak over the years, and there's something that they have in common is that they realize, for the most part, I don't think Bill Belichick is in this boat, but Nick Saban is. if you don't have a connection with a player, then you're not going to get the most out of them. Mm-hmm. You have to invest emotionally into your players, get to know them, because then when you do coach them hard or you do ask something of them, they're more likely to give it 100% and go do it. So ego, and everyone in the NFL has an ego, mm-hmm. from the undrafted free agent to the owner of everybody in there has an ego. So that's the thing that gets coaches to believe that they can pull something out of a kid that another one can't. I get a lot of athletes who come to my facility, ETA, holla at me, and it didn't work out at another program. Then they come to our program, and not everyone, but a lot of them come to our program, and they start improving. They're sharper. They understand the game. And I think my staff does a good job of just connecting with these players. So when you start to talk to them, it means more. All right. I had a stepdad before. That dude came in trying to run stuff. Bro, you don't know me like that. What you talking about? Stepdaddy? You don't know me like that. He's trying to, you know, you got to make a connection with me first. Sure. Then I'm going to listen to you. You know what I mean? So I think that's what it comes down to.
Can I inch into four down territory a little bit? Because I have one from a listener that reminded me of the Chicago Bears. An effort with them that failed, and the Seahawks are in a similar boat. So I'm curious as to what you think. A listener said, draft for 3 years from now, not for today. So when we get a quarterback, he'll have pieces around him. The Bears went quarterback first. They fell in love with Justin Fields. They took him before they had a lot of answers on that roster. Mm-hmm. And then they plopped in their brand new first round quarterback onto a failed team, an incomplete roster, a roster with a lot of holes and a lot of issues.
Right.
Meanwhile, Seattle has a much more complete roster than Chicago did when they got Justin Fields. But this listener's saying, maybe you make sure your offensive line is amazing. Maybe you make sure that you've got some really nice weapons before you get your quarterback.
Yeah.
What do you think about that philosophy?
I think it could work. I also think that you got to look at contracts that are important to you on that team and say, oh, is this guy going to be around? If you have a guy on a rookie contract and he's balling out, are you going to be able to pay him? I think there's a lot of other factors that come into it. I like the philosophy because it gives your quarterback the best opportunity to succeed.
Right.
But sometimes you just got to go and get your quarterback and say, all right, now let's do as much as we can to support him and realize his first year, it might be rough. That's why I am all for drafting your quarterback and having him sit if you don't necessarily need him. That's why I think the Vikings are going to do a good job with that. That's why I think the Denver Broncos signing Zach Wilson are going to do a job with that. That's the way I would do it, but I understand that approach.
Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, who are your top five QB2s in the NFL this season? I like this question.
Man, there's some guys out there. You got Carson Wentz over there with KC. Tyrod Taylor's with the Jets now. Jameis Winston is with Cleveland. Joe Flacco still in the game with Indy. And you got Drew Lock over there with the Giants, but neither of those guys are going to be in my top five. My top five in no order, no specific order, when it comes to the best backup quarterbacks in the league. You got to start at Pittsburgh and say whoever the backup quarterback there is solid. You got Justin Fields, you got Russell Wilson. Whoever is the backup is going to be okay. You got a Pro Bowler, and you have a kid with Pro Bowl type potential, if you ask me. Then I'm going to New England with Jacoby Brissett. He's got three seasons with double-digit touchdowns. He is one of the most solid backups you're going to have in this league. He's been around for a while. Then you got to go to Cincinnati. Jake Browning just signed a deal with the Cincinnati Bengals. 10 games last year, completed 66% of his passes, 15 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and 2 overtime wins. 3 games with over 300 passing yards. I like that there. Then we got to go down to Vegas. We feel like they're going to draft a quarterback, but Gardner Minshew was over there. 3,000 yards last year, 15 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. In 2 seasons where he played the most, he's gone for over 3,000 yards and 15 touchdowns, 21 his rookie year. The last guy, Sam Howell. I think he is a solid backup, as solid as they come. Yes, he threw 21 interceptions last year, but he showed he can handle a football season just with some coaching, with some nurturing, with some weapons. He could be okay. Those are my 5 top backups.
I don't like this question. Second down. What's an official sign that all of us are getting old?
It's crazy out here in these streets, Stacey.
I don't like
it. At least you look young. Like, I look my
age.
You can go down to the beer garden at T-Mobile and blend right in.
No.
Me not so much.
I think I look within a year or two of my age.
All right, well, I'll give it to you.
These kids, I'm telling you, I'm sorry if you're listening and you're 22. 21, 22, 23-year-olds look like teenagers.
They look like babies.
Yeah.
But here's gonna make you what's gonna make you feel really old. All right, you got Luke McCaffrey is gonna enter the league this year for Rice. He has 71 receptions, 992 yards, and 13 touchdowns. Brendan Rice, the son of Jerry Rice, will be in the draft this year. 45 receptions out of USC, 791 yards, 12 touchdowns. Tariq Owens. Terrell Owens' son out of Missouri State is going to be in this draft. 28 reception, 528 yards, and 4 touchdowns. And then the Triple OG himself, Frank Gore Jr., is in this draft as well. 1,100 yards, 10 touchdowns out of Southern Mississippi. Man, this is the second or third draft in a row where I'm seeing guys that are children of guys I used to watch growing up.
Man.
I don't like it.
I don't like that. I don't like it. Third down. Brock Purdy says he isn't focused on contract talks at this point. What do you think he will be worth once the Niners have to pay him?
This is a weird one because he doesn't have the talent of the best quarterbacks in the league, I don't think. But he does have the talent when it comes to running an offense, getting in out the huddle, making plays, and being clutch. I love me some Brock Purdy. I wish he wore a different jersey, but I love me some Brock Purdy. All right. I think he should get paid more than Daniel Jones, who's getting $40 million.
Oh, God.
More than Jared Goff, who's getting $33 million. And more than Geno, who's getting $25 million. I think he should be around Kyler Murray with $46 million a year. I think that's fair. I think Kyler Murray is more talented physically than Brock Purdy. But it's all about winning ball games, and Brock Purdy has done exactly that. Is Brandon Ayuk going to be there? We spoke yesterday about if he were not there, how do we feel about the Niners? We think they're going to be all right. You're still going to have George Kittle. You got to pay him next year. You still got Deebo Samuel. You still have Christian McCaffrey. You got to try to keep the band together as long as you can. Because once Brock Purdy gets paid, there's going to be some other young buck on that team who wants to get paid. And you got to mess with the books a little bit. So, yeah, I think he should be around $46 million a year. Last pick in the draft. Now is going to be paid around $40 to $50 million a year. He deserves it. That's what he should be getting paid.
Fourth down. What's something Mike McDonald said at a coach's clinic that sounds a bit like Pete Carroll?
He pretty much said you have to invest in guys emotionally and get to know them so you can coach them hard and don't give up on them. I agree with that, but I also know that this is a professional sport, and eventually you got to give up on guys. You just have to. You got to move on to the next. If someone's making the same mistake over and over and over again, now you got to look at where he's been drafted and how much money you've invested in him. Mm-hmm. If he's drafted higher, you invested more money, he gets more opportunities. But the guys at the bottom, guys who are drafted in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, you can invest in them. You can try to get the most out of them, and that sounds very similar to Pete Carroll. But at some point, those guys at the bottom, you're going to move on from. So I get the feeling of creating a family atmosphere. Yeah, it's family when you're winning. You start this season 1-3, 0-3. That family going to start arguing at the dinner table and start calling people out. So it all sounds good, and I love the approach. And it sounds like Pete Carroll, but you know what this business is. Not for long. It's a result-based business. If you don't get it done, changes will be made. You build a family in the OTAs and training camp and all that stuff, mm-hmm. preseason even. Once you got your 53 guys out there and dudes aren't producing, it's going to get cutthroat. So, yes, invest in your dudes. You should do that, especially the ones you expect to be here. But this is a business, man. It sounds good, but I know how this thing goes.
I always thought that was one of the, I don't want to say drawbacks, but the flip sides of being a player-friendly coach is when you – tell a 23, 24-year-old, I believe in you, you know, mm-hmm. and you try to play this this role of like a parent almost. These kids obviously have parents, but like this idea of like, I'll console you and you can come to me and like I can be a place of comfort. This is home for you. There will inevitably be a feeling of betrayal eventually.
Yep.
Because an actual parent, an actual mentor, someone who loves you, would never cut you because you ruptured your Achilles. They would never kick exactly. you out of your house because you turned 32. You know, well, maybe they would, but like, but that's not the reality of the NFL. And I always thought, like, you know, this what a delicate balancing act Pete Carroll has to do here, like mm-hmm. telling these guys, like, I believe in you, trust me, buy into what I'm selling. But eventually I'm going to move on from you. And I hope that me ripping that Band-Aid off doesn't hurt too much.
When I got cut from the Seahawks, they bring me into the GM's office. Bum, we love you, man. You can play, man. You ask anybody, Bum can play.
Then why aren't I here?
But we're going to let you go.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be like that.
If I can play, why are you gassing me up? Let's just keep it business then. It's just weird, man. So good luck with that.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
That's tough. All right. Very, very controversial ejection from an MLB game yesterday. Coming up next.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. You absolutely heard about this one. I'm not sure how many of you were actively watching a Yankees game yesterday, but in case you didn't know, Aaron Boone was ejected.
First base umpire, you saw making that call.
You're not yelling at me. I did what I was supposed to do and check. I'm looking for him to get hit by the pitch. Got anything else to say? You're gone. Okay?
Oh, okay, Hunter. Wow. You know what? We're not going to need a John Boy breakdown of that one. We got a very clear.
Aaron, you're done. Yeah,
there you go. And now Aaron's saying, I didn't say anything.
You're gone.
Aaron's saying, hold on a second. I didn't say a word.
No, I don't care.
Now, the reason that Aaron Boone, manager of the Yankees, is losing his mind is because there was a fan seated above and behind the dugout who yelled something. I watched the John Boy breakdown, and he said, like, come on, home plate, or something like that. Uh-huh. Like, something so innocent. I mean, not innocent. If you were a manager and he told you not to say anything else and you yelled, come on, home plate, he'd eject you. Sorry, that's how it is. But he did not say it. This is on tape. There is tape of Aaron Boone's mouth not moving.
Not moving.
And home plate umpire Hunter Wendelstead instead ejects him, so Aaron Boone is losing his mind. Now, Wendelstead had an explanation of why he tossed Aaron Boone and said this. Apparently what he said was, there was a fan right above the dugout. This isn't my first ejection. In the entirety of my career, I have never ejected a player or manager for something a fan has said. I understand that's going to be part of a story or something like that because that's what Aaron was portraying. I heard something come from the far end of the dugout. Had nothing to do with his area, but he's the manager of the Yankees, so he's the one that had to go. You are still admitting that that's what a fan said. This is on camera, Hunter.
Come on, son.
It is on camera.
That's what and there's a shortage of refs in Washington State. And there's a shortage because fans and players and coaches get after them. And I understand why some of these dudes get all riled up because they're not getting paid a lot of money. In the bigs, this is a bit different. And you have resources. Boone is going crazy saying he didn't say anything. Just check the film. Ask one of your boys. I bet you Blue on the first baseline probably saw it and had an explanation. And here's the thing, too, is like referees are so full of themselves that they can never come out and say, we messed that up. Even when the NBA or the NFL, when they mess something up, they send a letter and ESPN throws it up on the screen and say, we messed this up. You expect players and coaches to behave a certain way and come out and admit when they're at fault. They need to do the same thing. Also, I would love to play for Aaron Boone. I love his energy. I love that cocky, I don't give a about nobody. I'm going to talk my talk. I got the shades on. His whole vibe is what I want to play for, who I want to play for.
I think Hunter Wendelstedt's explanation also goes to show just how much power and just how untouchable so many umps in baseball feel because of that union.
Yep.
He knows that despite there being video evidence of a fan behind the dugout yelling something, Aaron not saying anything and no other coach saying anything, that he can say, well, I mean, that's part of the story that Aaron's saying. And he knows there's no consequence.
Yeah.
Hunter knows that he can come out and say, look, this isn't my first ejection. I've never ejected a player for something a fan said. He knows that there will be no consequence to him being blatantly wrong. I heard something come from the far end of the dugout. No, you didn't.
You did.
Like, you heard something come from behind the dugout. You heard that fan. There were not coaches that said anything. Aaron did not say anything. But he knows that he can tell the version of the story that he wants because there's no consequence.
Untouchable.
That's what I'm saying.
He'll do it for another 10 years.
And what's so frustrating is, yeah, this is the Yankees, and none of us here in Seattle care about the Yankees. And, yes, this is a game, was a game on April 22nd. It was yesterday. What if this is game 5?
Weren't they playing the A's?
Huh?
Were they playing the A's?
They were, yeah.
So we kind of care about it. Go ahead and beat up on the A's.
Sure. Yeah, sure. But what if this is a playoff game? What if this is a Mariners game?
Yeah.
What if this is a game where you actually care and you have an ump that says, I know what I heard? There's video evidence. Come out and say, my apologies to Aaron. I can't go back in time and fix it, but my apologies.
No, he's not going to say that.
No.
I tell my kids all the time, the ref is right even when he's wrong, unfortunately. And hopefully they will be held accountable, but we all know that ain't going down.
Yeah, it's just, I can't get over. Someone said, they were talking about the John Boy video. Did the camera check the whole dugout? It is clear that what he's hearing is
this
fan.
Come on, dog.
It's
clear, you just want to argue.
It is clear that this guy
Wisconsin.
Is hearing the fan and that he is covering his tracks by saying, because he knows that there's no way for anyone to know whether every single person in that dugout was quiet. What he is absolutely responding to, and the timing in the video matches up, and him throwing Aaron out matches up, is what he's hearing from that fan. Maybe someone in the dugout said something. That's not what he's responding to.
He's not.
He's just using he's using it as an excuse.
You see the fan's mouth move.
Yes.
He reacts, throws him out. Just come on, admit when you're wrong, son.
I know. Here's what Aaron Boone had to say about it.
Aaron, how do you wrap your head around what happened in the first inning?
Hard to. Hard to. I wasn't even really, I really didn't even go after Hunter. You know, I was more upset that, you know, on the appeal, and I said, Hunter, you can call it too. And he came back at me pretty hard, to which I didn't respond. I just said, okay, went down, and it's embarrassing. It really is it's embarrassing.
I mean, everybody can see the video, but is that a scenario where you reach out to Major League Baseball about that?
Yeah, I mean, yes, but just you know, not good.
An objectively funny experience for the fan.
Hey, he's like, famous.
I want to know how that guy's feeling. And
he was
after
sitting
that,
there
was
by
like,
himself, too. Yeah, no, nobody with him. He was dolo.
He's hanging out. Next up, let's talk Lakers. Anthony Davis was not in the mood to answer questions following the Lakers' loss to the Nuggets yesterday.
To kind of piggyback off that one, can you take us through that last play and just what happened and what unfolded? What was, I don't know if you were screened or what happened on that last play.
Jamal Murray made a shot.
Yeah, I don't blame him for being upset. What a shot, though.
Yeah, he's upset. I'll tell you what happened. Jamal Murray brings the ball down the court. They set a screen. They get the switch that they want, and Anthony Davis is guarding him. Jamal drives to the right side, step back. Boom, game is over. Then Anthony Davis is caught up in the mix, all on the bench of the Denver Nuggets. Man, it was just all bad. There's your explanation. Leave Anthony alone. Give me one win, please.
Next up, Tom Brady has a bone to pick with young athletes. He says they're all about me first.
I think the biggest problem with a lot of kids these days, all about them. All about them, their brand, their social media. And then when it's about me and then not about us, well, there's no way to succeed as a team if all you're doing is thinking about how selfish it is for you to get the attention.
It's cool to show the world how great you are, but the most inspiring thing is how great you can make others.
That's the point of life, is what we could do. How do you help other people finish the race, not just you?
What do you think?
God dang it, Tom. It's making me like you more and more and more because I am in the industry of youth sports. And the stuff that I see when I travel the country, travel the region, is ridiculous. Kids are making plays, taunting other kids, making it about them. They got, where's the camera? They're trying to find the camera. That stuff is nothing. What's going to matter when you get to college, and that's the problem with youth sports, is that you got youth-minded coaches coaching these dudes, which allow these kids to behave the way that will get them thrown out the game and kicked out of a program. I can't agree more with Tom Brady, man. Make it about the team. You get paid tens of millions of dollars and you want to do your thing and dance in the end zone or whatnot, okay, you go ahead and do it. You've earned that. But at this point right here, it is. It's about making your team better. I can't stand the way youth sports is going.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. I do want to go back and listen to the full interview because I don't think Brady is being hypocritical per se. I do wonder if he mentioned, you know, when I get that I had my brand and I get that I had, you know, my special allowances as quarterback of this franchise and I get what I was focused on because Brady was clearly a team first guy. But it's if he's talking specifically and moves that conversation into talking about branding and stuff like that, he was doing that stuff too.
Yeah, but he's talking about like
I think
branding
he's talking about attitude.
Sense. Yeah, in the they're chasing NILs.
Right.
They're chasing social media. Tom Brady has a brand because he's Tom freaking Brady, not because he's little Bobby Joe that plays on the 7-on-7 team in freaking Ellensburg.
Mina Kimes joining us in 20 minutes to talk about the draft. Before we get to it, we got a brand new profile. Looking at an offensive lineman this time, it's not Troy Fautanu. Don't go anywhere.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
ESPN's Mina Kimes joining us in 15 minutes. We'll find out who she thinks the Seahawks should take at pick number 16 and what she thinks about what they can get done in the draft over those 3 days. Before we get to it, though, let's talk about one potential pick for Seattle. Another Seahawks draft profile, so let's get to it at pick number 16. Seattle selects Duke center Graham Barton. And Bump, before I throw to you, before anyone yells at Bump and says anything about this not being 16, because I set you up for failure here, I want to make it clear that this was in part inspired by a couple mocks I saw that had the Seahawks trading back and taking Graham a little later. So this is with their first pick, though not necessarily at 16. Okay,
don't yell at me.
Before I set you up, okay,
don't yell at me.
Let's hear more about Duke center Graham Barton.
All right, well, he was actually left tackle. He's projected to be a center. He can play the position. He double dabbed in it, but was more of a tackle. Another guy that you could see moving positions. His comp has been Cody Whitehair. Didn't the Hawks bring in Cody Whitehair for a visit? So they obviously like that type of player if they're looking at this guy, Graham Barton, 6'5", 313 pounds. First team all ACC in 2023 and 2022. Like I mentioned, play some tackle, projected as a center. He has bend. When you talk about bend with these big boys, it's extremely important. That means that them hips can move a little bit. They're not all stiff. They're not upright. And when you're 313 pounds and 6'5", you can imagine how tough it is to get low. I think he can play tackle or center in the league. We shall see what happens there. The only knock that I could find on this dude is that he has shorter arms, whatever that means. I get that, you know, you want a guy who can reach from here into the wall that's 15 feet away from me. But end of the day, if you can understand your leverage, you should be okay. Every time I look at film and I'm breaking down a guy, I try to come up with like a phrase that just kind of just encompasses who he is. And the first thing I thought about was Mortal Kombat. In Mortal Kombat, when the fight is almost over and you're guaranteed the victory, what does the voice say in Mortal Kombat, Matthew?
Finish him.
Finish him. That's not our role. Finish him. He finishes his block, Stacey. Go ahead and play Mortal Kombat. You should try it. This is a great game.
I don't want to try
it. My mom didn't let me play when I was younger because it was too bloody, but you know I found a way to get that done.
Did you go to an arcade?
I just got the homies down the street to get Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
Mom, come on. You tripping. But finish him. He finishes the blocks. He is aggressive, man, and he understands angles. That's all the run game is. Can you set your offense up, get the shades that you want of the defense to where the angles are easier for the offensive lineman, and even when they're not easy, he understands how to get there and where to put his hands. He is a big boy. He has a good five-yard burst. Like I mentioned, we don't need linemen to run 40s anymore. Don't know why they're doing it. If they're running 40 yards down the field, they're not full speed. Even if they're in a screen, about 10 to 15 yards and they're done. But you watch him in that box, that 5 to 10-yard area, he gets off the ball and he is reckless. When you are 6'5", 313 pounds, guys are going to run out, move out your way. I mean, linebackers are going to try to challenge you, but you get to those safeties, those nickels, those corners, they're going to move out the way. So I look at this guy and I think of Mortal Kombat finishing, and I think of versatility. Whoever you get on this offensive line, I think has to be versatile. That's why I like Troy Faltano as well, because he can play center, he can play tackle, he can play guard. People have even said that he could play center. You look at a guy like Graham Barton, he can play tackle, he can play guard. Versatility is key because for some reason guys get hurt on this offensive line. So that's our guy out of Duke, Graham Barton. I love him. Finish him. He's nasty out there.
If the Seahawks, let's say this draft scenario happens, and then tell me how you're feeling about the Seahawks day one, okay? Troy Faltano goes at number 14 to the Saints. The Seahawks are on the board at 16. You don't have some random edge rusher like Dallas Turner we thought would fall to you. He's already off the board, and now you don't have the tackle we were hoping you could take and swap to a guard in Troy Faltano. Mm-hmm. They trade back. They pick up a second rounder. They go into the 20s. Maybe they trade, I don't know, a team in the 20s somewhere. And they take Graham Barton. But now they have a second rounder. How are you feeling about their day?
I'm feeling all right about it. I'm feeling okay. Again, it's never going to pan out the way that we want it to pan out. Maybe it will for a little bit. Maybe they do take a pick at 16, or we can expect them to move back. We talked about them moving back to 20 to the Steelers, mm-hmm. or maybe even there was like a 28 in there that we looked at as well. As long as they are addressing things that are needed early, it could be a good day. And if they address the offensive line early, good day. Defensive line early, good day. Quarterback with that 16 because you have a guy that you want, that's a good day to me. If they go crazy, and I love me some Cooper DeJean. Love Cooper DeJean. Hell of a name. If they go crazy and they pick him at 16 and you got some good offensive linemen out there, some good defensive linemen out there, that's the one I'm going to leave scratching my head. If they go crazy and pick a wide receiver at number 16 and you already got three dogs, that's going to leave me scratching my head. But for the most part, there's not much they can do, in my opinion, to make this a bad day, whether they pick at 16 or they trade back and still are able to address the trenches or not.
I have a question about offensive linemen height, weight. We have a listener, Bryant, who asked how Graham Barton compares to Jackson Powers Johnson, who to me is a more traditional center, 6'3", 320, coming out of Oregon. He started at center last year for the Ducks. When I look at Graham Barton, I go, wait a minute, 6'5"?
Big boy.
311. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. A little less weight and 2 inches taller. is that less of an ideal size for an interior lineman for you?
Yeah, for me, you know, you want your guys. But again, what was his knock? His arms.
His arms.
Right? And right. When you're playing the tackle position, arms, having long arms is going to be an advantage because it allows you to make those edge rushes bend the corner a bit sooner.
So is that why they profile him?
So
like, maybe
I think
on
that's
the
why
inside?
They see him moving inside because his arms aren't ideal when it comes to the tackle position. But I look at him and go, he can play anywhere he wants to play. Probably not guard because of the movement that you ask your guards to do more consistently. But, I mean, he's a ball player. I'll take him.
Interesting. All right. We are going to figure out who Mina Kimes wants to see at pick number 16 for the Seahawks. She joins us next. Don't go anywhere.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.